Welcome to the last episode of Season 2 of The Meridian. It is April 15th and we are, once again, coming to you from Lund Observatory in Sweden. Crossing our local meridian today, we have a guest from the Department of Geology, PhD student Chiara Pirani, who has been studying ice cores and has discovered evidence of an ancient sol storm. If you have been following along this season, you'll also know that we have been bringing you some exciting field reporting from my observing trip at the Nordic Optical Telescope in La Palma. In this final episode, you'll get to hear about the conclusion of our observing adventure.
Interplanetary galaxy formation,
habitability,
near-infrared,
near-Earth asteroids,
dynamical evolution,
visible light,
radio,
the meridian,
telescope, dark energy,
exoplanets,
the meridian,
the universe,
the meridian,
the meridian,
the meridian,
the meridian.
The Meridian.
Hey, Rebecca.
Good morning, Nick.
How are you?
I'm fine. I'm a bit, you know, sad that this is the last episode of the season.
Yeah, I know. Me too.
But I think this will be the best episode ever.
Don't you say that every week?
Yeah, but I think they are all great, you know?
Yeah, I think so.
We've had quite amazing people come by. So every week we do the episode and I'm like, well, this is the best episode. And then the next week comes, I'm like, no, this is the best episode. So
well, I guess it's fun when you're doing something that is the best. So, technically you are correct. But how about we do a bit of a review? What was one of your favorite guests that we had on the podcast?
Oh, there's so many, right? But I really like to have Josephine Martel, the PhD student in geology here.
Right, that was in season one. Creators.
Yeah, exactly. That was like the second episode of the first season, so
yeah,
way back.
Yeah, okay.
Do you have any favorites?
I really enjoyed interviewing Michael Way, actually.
Uh-huh,
I found his research really interesting. Just talking about Venus and could it be habitable? It sort of, and like the way he describes it really captured my imagination.
No, that interview was really great.
And yeah.
Yeah, I also really like talking to Ori Fox, who we talked about the James Webb Space Telescope. And, you know, ever since, because then we talked about like this first image where you saw one star in 18 pieces.
Yeah.
But now from that, we've actually got this amazing where you see the one star, but there's a lot of galaxies in the background too. So.
I know, it was kind of crazy because I saw someone show me a comparison with another telescope and it's just this smudge of an image. Mm-hmm. And then now you've got this really sharp image. And like we're going to see some really cool stuff with that telescope.
Yeah. I guess we had a lot of, our own also researchers from the observatory coming onto the pod.
Yeah, there was Paul who talked about Gaia. Yeah, and discovering a Jaffa star.
Yeah, people need to listen to the episode to get a hold of what the Jaffa star is.
Yes, and I think I explained what a Jaffa is in one of the other episodes too. So a few Easter eggs for you to go digging for.
Yeah, and also I really liked the episode with Diane, of course, because we do work on quite similar things. And all the way back, we also had Mikhail in the first episode with the exoplanets and planet formation.
Yeah, season one. That was really special. I think that was the first time we were doing this thing. We didn't really know what we were doing. And we sort of, once we had that interview, it was kind of like, okay, this is something cool.
If there is a new listener here, where would you recommend them to start if they want to start listening to this pod?
Yeah, that's a good question.
If this is the first episode they're hearing, right?
Yeah, so I guess season one doesn't really have, you can pick one randomly and start listening to there. So maybe pick the talker that sounds most interesting to you.
Mm-hmm.
Season two is a little more trickier because we have a audio diary. So you might, at the end of it, with my trip to La Palma, you might get a bit confused if I start talking about, weather on a telescope that I'm observing in, but you didn't really hear about me come to that. So,
no, that's true. Because in the first season, we had Katrin Rose, the editor of Popular Astronomy, talking about space objects, but now we actually have you reporting. So
it
is very nice. It's a bit of a cliffhanger in the end of every episode, I think.
Yeah, kind of like a little bit of a story that we can follow around. Mm. Yeah.
So now when we've heard most of the story on La Palma, you didn't get quite all of the data that you wanted to.
I didn't get really any of the data that I wanted to.
Because people sort of ask me sometimes, because when I also went to the same telescope, right? I also had quite a lot of bad weather.
Yeah.
And there was actually, because I was there for 1 week at some point, and I got to open the dome for like 8 hours for that whole week.
Okay,
so it was a bit devastating. And then people ask me, like, oh, but you get the time back, right? But that's not really the case.
Yeah, so I am going to get the time back. But
oh, you do?
Yeah, so...
but you need to reapply.
You have to reapply and argue your science case. Yeah, yeah. So the cool thing about it is, well, for some telescopes are completely anonymous and you can't ask for your time that you lost again because that would break anonymity. But with the not, you can say that this was actually proven scientifically valid earlier.
Yeah, sure.
You're still competing though. So if someone comes up with a better idea, you can still be not allocated your time. So... it's kind of sad because you do have sometimes only have one shot to observe a target, but it's kind of the life we live in, and you know, you always can just keep pushing forward. There's always another project that you can make, and I guess in science sometimes it just things don't go your way because if they were, it wouldn't be science. So we can't make up results. We have to sort of make sure that the universe sort of dictates what we can and can't do.
I guess. But so you will go back actually, or?
Yeah, yeah. So this July we're going to go back for 2 months.
Awesome. I hope the volcano is not interrupting anything this time.
Well, it's dormant now, so you know, I know it might erupt again. Fingers crossed it doesn't. But yeah, not going to be as big of an adventure. It's just going to be me and Bibi. The rest of my research group will stay back in Sweden, so it's going to be more just get it done and then come back.
Oh, still, it's amazing to just go there.
Yeah. So what happens now? Are we going to make a third season?
Well, you know that sort of application I made to ESO many months back that you actually sort of helped me with a bit?
Yep.
Yeah, so I got the position.
What?
Yeah, I know. I'm over the moon happy. So yeah, I'm going to ESO in like a few weeks' time now to be there for 6 months doing like... Hey. Science journalism.
6 months?
Mm-hmm.
You're leaving me?
I'm sorry, but yeah. So I guess perhaps the third season will have to be put on hold there. You know, we've had a great run, Nick.
Yeah, I just wasn't ready for this.
You didn't think I'd get it?
No, I did. I'm not surprised, but I thought you might go for a week or something like that, because it's a holiday, but no. Of course, I'm super happy for you, Rebecca.
Thank you.
But yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. Either you have to find another host, perhaps, because I'll come back in December, you know? But I don't know. How much time do we even have left?
Well, that's the thing about me is that I'm actually doing a special split PhD program.
Right.
So,
yes.
So it's called a Coachitel PhD at Macquarie University.
A coach a what?
Coachitel.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be agnostic to the name, but yeah, so my plan is to actually go back to Australia in April next year to start that second stint.
See, now you're breaking my heart.
I didn't realize this episode was going to be so emotional.
So when are you leaving?
So April, around 1st of April, that's when my time stops.
Yeah, so in a year from now, basically. Yeah. So I'll be gone for half a year. Yeah, so we have a few months before you leave. Mm-hmm. So the risk that the next season perhaps will have two new hosts.
Yeah, exactly. And that's like one of the biggest things is that this podcast doesn't belong to you and me. While we are the original hosts,
of course.
It doesn't necessarily going to have us here all the time. This is Lund Observatory's podcast.
Yeah.
And I think that's something, you know, we need to be humble about that, is that we bring science to the masses, but other people can do that too.
Yeah, of course. I really like the thing you said a few episodes back about you talked about teaching with Bibi and you can't pay, you know, back in time, but you can really pay forward.
Yeah.
It's a very nice quote that I want to sort of... I hope it continues to live after this pod. But, you know, of course it's not the end, right? It might, you know, someone might pick it up. We might have time to do an extra season. We'll see.
Yeah, it's not goodbye. It's see you later.
No, and also, you know, we need to get this last episode going.
Yep, definitely. So let's jump right into it then, shall we?
Yeah. Like to welcome our very last guest of this season, Chiara Pagliari, who's a PhD student at Geology. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for coming. I thought we could talk a little bit about you. So where do you come from and what do you study at the Geology department?
So I'm Italian. So I come from Milan, where I did all my studies. I studied environmental sciences, but I kind of got immediately interested in geology from the very first semester. And during my master, then I ended up working with ice cores and climate, and which belongs to the geology field.
So, but how did you end up in London?
Well, I wanted to do research in ice cores, and I saw that there was this position advertised. So I applied for it and I got an interview, but I did not get a position. But they just offered me another position, and it was for this project, and I thought it was really cool.
Oh, that's cool that, you know, you applied for a position, but then that you didn't get, but you ended up coming here anyway.
Yeah, it was really cool.
I guess it meant that they really wanted you. So, okay. So iScores, what are those, and how do you get those?
So iScores are basically just very, very long cylinder of ice.
Okay.
That you can get from the ice caps like Greenland and Antarctica, or from glaciers.
Mm-hmm.
And you just go there and drill.
Okay.
And you get this super long cylinder of ice.
So super long. When you say super long, is it like...
thousands of meters.
Okay, like a kilometer.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, that's really long. Okay, so and then when you have them, where are they stored?
They're stored in very, very big freezers.
Mm-hmm.
Freezers.
Sure.
There's one in Copenhagen, because they are kind of at the head of these drilling programs. So they store all this ice in these huge freezers, and you can apply for it. You can, if you have a very really good idea, you can ask for some ice and then go to Copenhagen with this very big freezer and pick up the ice.
Oh, okay. But so you need to like actually apply to get some of the ice, or how does that work?
You come up with an idea
and
then you write a very short proposal and you send it to the University of Copenhagen, and they... usually, if they have the ice and the idea is decent, then they approve it, and then you can just go and pick up the ice you need.
Okay, that's sort of similar to what we do in astronomy, where we apply for time at telescopes, and then if you have a good idea, you if you're lucky, you get time at least. So that does mean that they have like dated the whole ice core, and you say that you want I don't know, how long can you go back in time with these?
I think in Antarctica you can go back to 800,000 years at least. And
okay.
Now they're drilling an ice core that goes back 1 million years.
That's like a substantial part of the history of the Earth. Okay, can you use something else than ice cores? Or is it ice cores that you really have to like measure sort of the past?
You can use other archives. There are tree rings that provide a wealth of information, and but you can also like look for climate signals in sediments, for example.
My thinking is the tree doesn't get very old, or I'm not a biologist, so I don't really know how old trees get, but surely they don't get 1 million years, right?
No. No, but you can find dead trees. If you measure radiocarbon, then you can find several thousand years old.
Okay, so when you say like radiocarbon here, like what do you actually do with ice cores? What do you want to measure?
For the ice core, we measure two elements. There are 10 beryllium and chlorine 36.
Mm-hmm.
And these are produced together with C14, so radiocarbon, in the atmosphere. And then they can be trapped in the ice cores.
Okay, they're like trapped in like bubbles, or how?
Yeah, so basically the ice cores, measuring an ice core is like reading the history of climate. Because they trap air bubbles, so you can trap the actual atmosphere. And if you measure what's in these air bubbles, then you can get information on the climate in the past.
Right, so you can study like the ancient atmosphere of Earth.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you said that you study beryllium and chlorine?
Yeah.
Why those two?
These two are produced in the atmosphere when this high energetic particles come from outside the solar system, so cosmic rays, and also by solar energetic particles that come from the sun during events like solar storms.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get mixed up in the atmosphere, and they can be then trapped in the ice.
Sure. Yeah, because I guess when you say solar storms, there are a bunch of varieties of solar storms, right?
Yeah.
So there are solar flares, which is when the magnetic fields of the sun are sort of tangling and crossing with each other. We also have coronal mass ejections, or CMEs, and CMEs, that's when plasma gets ejected. We also have geomagnetic storms, that is the interaction of the sun's outburst with the Earth's magnetic field, so that happens a bit more locally, I guess.
Yeah.
And the solar particle events, which is when you have protons or very energetic particle storms that hits the Earth.
Yeah.
Yeah. So which one of these do you study?
In ice cores, we can detect these solar energetic particle events.
Mm-hmm.
What we find are these events.
Okay, right. So you talked about the cosmic rays, and then you also have the sun. So how do you see which is which?
So when the sun's magnetic field changes mm-hmm. over time, and it can get more intense or less intense.
Okay.
And when it's more intense, less cosmic rays can reach the Earth. So it acts as a shielding.
Ah, okay.
When
yeah.
it's less intense, it means that more cosmic rays can pass this shielding and get to the Earth. And once they get to the Earth, they also encounter another shielding, which is the geomagnetic field.
Mm-hmm.
So the production of these elements changes according to how much this magnetic field of the sun and the Earth change.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see these kind of long-term variations that are linked to the sun's magnetic field and the geomagnetic field, and mm-hmm. these very short-term peaks that are linked to solar storms.
Right. So, okay, so studying these ice cores is like, is it like one of, I guess the tree rings also is one of the ways to study the sun in the past.
Yes, exactly.
That's really cool. Why do we need to know about the sun in the past? Like, what's the effect of solar storms, I guess?
Well, there are several.
Mm-hmm.
And they affect our everyday life because we rely so much on technology and on satellites. Mm-hmm. And they can, for example, damage them. And you might have seen that at the beginning of February, 40 out of 49 Starlink satellites kind of knocked out by a geomagnetic storm.
Yeah, yeah. Did you? Yeah, I saw on the news that you could sort of see them falling down as, shooting stars.
I saw. I was in Tromsø in those days, and I actually saw one, I think, at least.
Yeah. Wow, okay. Yeah, so it can knock out the satellites and technology here on Earth.
Yeah.
But I guess that's also when we get to see the auroras, right? I guess one of the perks of it. It's kind of pretty.
I think in January, the aurora could be seen from Stockholm. Mm. So that's cool.
Yeah.
But there are more intense events that we can recall. Like in 2003, there were these events called Halloween storms because they happened at the end of October.
Sure.
And these solar storms were so intense that the northern lights could be seen in Texas.
Oh, wow. That's very far down. I guess you could see them here in Skåne then as well.
Yeah, if they're that intense, I guess.
Okay, that's really... But of course, then it's super important to know how the sun behaves, right?
Yeah.
Do you work anything with, like, I guess astronomers to, like, understand the sun and stars more?
Not yet, but it would be really nice to build a cooperation with someone that actually do solar physics to kind of understand more the phenomenon itself.
Well, I do know people who know about stars, so that would be cool to look at in the future. I was thinking... I actually saw that you were on the homepage of Lund University like a few weeks ago with your publication in Nature. Yeah, yeah. So you want to talk a little bit about that? Like, what did you actually do there?
Sure. So for this project, we went to Copenhagen to pick up some samples from about 9,000 years ago. And so they store, as I said, they store a whole lot of samples because they have this very big freezer. So we just applied for ice and we got it. Mm-hmm. So we just took it back to Lund and we went into our small freezer to cut it.
And, so you have a freezer here at the...
Very tiny one.
At the Department of Geology.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Very small one where we just store our samples and we just cut them when we need them.
Sure.
And so we cut these samples and we try usually to get samples of about 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And then we melt the ice and we extract these elements. And then we get them measured so that we know how much beryllium and how much chlorine are in each sample.
Sure. I just think, isn't it fairly cold to like work in a freezer all day?
It is. But the biggest problem is the ventilation.
Okay.
Because it's like being in crazy wind.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And it's a minus 20 or so.
Wow, minus 20. You know, so you
could
really
be bearable, but with all the wind, it gets really, really cold.
So you really like gear up with hats and
everything.
Yes. That's cool. It must be fun going to work in summer and, you know.
Fun is a word.
So what did you find then for your 9,000 year old ice?
We found a really sharp peak in both beryllium and chlorine.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are able to link this peak to a solar storm.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of these solar energetic particle events. And we were also able, as I said, beryllium and chlorine, they trapped all the information from the sun, how it changed over time.
Sure.
And so we were able to see the 11-year solar cycle into the data. So the sun goes from being more quiet to being more active in these cycles of 11 years. And we were able to pinpoint when during the cycle the event occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And we think it occurred during a period where the sun was very quiet.
Oh, okay. That's surprising.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so not only that it was a very, like, what would you say, very high intensity solar storm, it was also happening when we didn't expect them to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
As I've understood it, you might correct me if I'm wrong, we're going into one of these like higher cycles of the sun now. So yeah, we're expecting like more auroras and stuff like
that.
Yes,
that's correct.
Okay, but with your data, you're meaning that this super intense one can actually happen like when we don't expect them.
Yes, we don't know enough yet, because only, I think, 4 events have been discovered and confirmed in ice cores and tree rings in the past. So we don't have the statistics to say, okay, there is a pattern or they can be that intense. So we need to kind of discover more.
So is it a fairly young field or?
Yeah, it started about 10 years ago when they found a peak in radiocarbon and it was dated 774 AD.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that one is the one of the largest events that have been discovered so far. Mm-hmm. And yeah, then they found one more. And after that, another one. And now this one.
And now you found another one. Exactly. That's so cool. It's like, so like one of the 4 that we know of, like one of those you've actually been studying.
Yeah, it's not really discovered because it was in lower resolution records. Confirmed. And blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Okay, I feel like I want to wrap this up. And thank you so much, Kara, for coming.
I've learned so much
about the sun and in particular ice cores, and I hope you know you find more of these in the future.
Me too.
Thank you.
There are many types of astronomers and their research focus varies a lot. There are those who want to understand how stars form, evolve and explode. There are cosmologists who are more interested in the cosmic microwave background and how dark energy shapes our universe. And there are planetary scientists looking for signatures of life in the atmospheres of distant planets. The universe is huge and there's a lot to explore. In the second season of The Meridian, we have met and talked to all sorts of astronomers, and we've had opportunity to follow along as a team of astronomers here from Lund goes observing in La Palma. And it's now time for the last of these field reports. In the beginning of the season, Nick and Bibi were excited about having time on the Nordic Optical Telescope despite earthquakes, ash and lava and an ongoing pandemic. The erupting volcano caused some problems getting to La Palma and then proceeded to cause troubles during their first observing night. This time we catch up with Nick and Bibi after their second and last observing night and get to hear how that went.
Hey! It's Nick again. It's day 14 of our trip, and I'm actually coming to you from Santa Cruz on the coast of La Palma this time. So our last night of observations also didn't end too well. This time it wasn't ash blocking our view, but clouds. And I guess I should be sad about that, but at the same time it's just life. Like, we can't control the weather or a volcano erupting or planet transits really. So I guess we're at the mercy to all of nature, and we just have to make the most of it whenever we can. So all in all, we have about a quarter of a good night's worth of data and a good deal of life experience, which I guess isn't the worst thing in the world. But after that night though, we packed up our things and headed back down the mountain to take some time off. And this week pretty much has just been a mixture of enjoying really good food, exploring the island, going to a bunch of museums, and getting as close as possible to the volcano. I mean, as safely as possible to the volcano. To talk me through it all again is, of course, Bibi.
Hey, Bibi.
Hey, Nick.
How are you going?
I'm very tired today, but other than that, very good.
How come you're tired?
Yeah, I had a meeting this morning at 8. So actually, it was at 9 in Swedish time, but because of the time difference, all the meetings that we had was
just
an hour earlier. Mm-hmm. So in the end...
Yeah.
How are you doing?
Yeah, look, all things considered, pretty good. I'm really enjoying this time off. I think it was really nice to sort of just take an extra week to sort of decompress and see this beautiful island that we're actually on as well. It's not all about the science. Sometimes you have to enjoy life as well.
Yes.
So speaking of science, what happened in our last night of observations?
I would say not much.
Yep.
And it's probably not the biggest lie. Yeah. I don't know. Let's say the science part was not that great. It was very cloudy.
Yeah.
We did basically not get signal in. We had some issues in the very beginning with actually starting our observations because it sort of... I don't really know how to describe it, and everyone who knows telescopes and instruments better than I do will just be like, oh my gosh, what is he talking about? But apparently one has to switch focus on which instrument you're actually going to use. Mm. And when we did that and we switched to FIES, it was sort of StanCam, which is another instrument, sort of blocking that, something mechanically that did not really work.
Yeah.
And in the end of that, I guess we didn't really see that because it didn't really show up as an error message. It just said, hey, I cannot execute your script. And Sarah, our night astronomer, was then our angel again and found out what was wrong.
Yeah, well, we were all thinking we had done something wrong, but we were submitting the same thing that we had done the first night. That ran really smoothly. So it was, it came down to two things, not talking to each other quite well. And so, but we lost only about 10 to 15 minutes of our data, which was okay because we had planned for that too. So we had some, so it wasn't too bad. And then we looked up at the sky and it wasn't so great. I remember going outside and Jens was taking photos with his camera, and then he was like, pointing at the sky and saying, look, hopefully the clouds are going to disperse and we'll get some really clear nights, and it didn't happen, right? So,
Yeah, that was very sad, especially also like one of my absolute not favorite messages on screen was guide star lost.
Yeah.
We've seen that so much during that night.
Exactly. So, yeah. And I remember like looking at just the data and stuff, and it was getting worse and worse, and then eventually just became a flat line and all like. So, I guess we have to say, oh, well, I think we are allowed to be a little bit upset about it too. Like, sometimes you have to sort of accept it that it is pretty crap, but it wasn't too bad because we also had to, we got to celebrate, right? Because
yes, at least we got some wine.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So Sarah, our support astronomer, that was actually her second last night of observing. She's going to, back to Italy, and then she's going to go into Chile to start her PhD as well.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so I guess it was nice anyway. It was nice because we got to know her and, make a new friend on this trip, which was really nice. And I think that's part of the whole package deal of being an astronomer, is you get to travel the world and meet really cool people. So, how do you feel about not getting the data that we wanted?
After the very, very first night that we had, I was very sad, of course, but also because you were very sad.
Yeah.
So for me, it was more a sort of learning experience to come here and actually operate a telescope and instrument myself. But in the end, the data wouldn't have been mine in that sense. Of course, it would belong to Anders because he's the PI.
Yes.
But still, it would have been the data you would have been working with.
Yeah.
So therefore, I guess I'm a bit disappointed, of course, because we didn't get it in. But on the other hand, I think we've learned so much during this trip. We've met so many cool people.
Yeah.
So in the end, as you said, it's more of gaining life experience and just decoupling from our PhDs for a week and just be like, brain out.
Yeah, it was like we got a chance to press the reset button.
Yes, exactly. How are you feeling?
So I guess losing your second night isn't as bad as losing your first night because, well,
you're already used to it.
Yeah. But also, we really needed two nights to actually achieve what we wanted to achieve. So the fact that we had a quarter of one night would have really meant that, we would have really had to been lucky at getting a perfect signal. And so getting a second night that wasn't that great meant that it was the last nail in the coffin. And so now it really was, we have to pivot what my first project is going to be and be more creative. And so in a way, what we're doing now is a bit more clearer. And it's still a guarantee, we're still not guaranteed, but it's still clear the way forward, what the way forward is for my research. So I wasn't too upset about it. And I also was a bit more aware that it could happen and to be mentally prepared for this kind of stuff too. So, we'll see, guess.
At least we got some time on La Palma.
Yes.
Now afterwards as
well. Exactly. And that's what we've been doing. So where are we right now?
So right now we're in this wonderful, can I call it a city? I guess I can call it a city.
Yeah, you call it a city.
Santa Cruz. And this is also the place where we arrived with the ferry.
Mm-hmm.
And we're actually quite close to the harbour.
Yeah.
And we've been staying here in this little apartment.
Yeah.
Together with Ryan.
Yes.
So that was really fun. So yeah. We made a lot of nice breakfast in the morning. Mm-hmm. So everyone got their turn to make breakfast. Yeah, I think it was a very nice stay here.
Yeah.
A lot of food.
But a lot, yes.
Wow, and we were thinking that the chef on top of the mountain gave us a lot of food. We didn't do better down here,
no,
I would say.
No, definitely not. So,
yeah.
But it's been nice. Like, we've been going to the beach a couple of times, and like the sand here is like black.
Yes.
And it's such a cool, like, cool different type of beach. Like, some of the beaches in Australia have like white sand that like blinds you when the sun reflects off it, and then you go to this black sand and it's just as cool. So it's sort of a really unique place of the world to be, and I guess that was, it's been so good. And we've also been able to see Sara a couple of times too. So, so it's been a good like example of like socializing, and then also I think it was a chance for us to bond with Brian and with Jens in out of context of a work environment, which is nice because you sort of see the people behind the job as well.
Yeah, and you're sort of like, I don't know, not surprised, but you get some sort of impressions of how they are outside of their normal habitat, let's say that way.
Yes, exactly.
So that was really interesting to see.
Yeah. But obviously we haven't been mentioning something that was definitely the highlight of our trip.
The highlight of our trip? Let me think. Is it erupting?
It is erupting.
It's erupting. Okay. So I guess you're talking about the wonderful thing that is going on in La Palma and has been vomiting lava ever since. No? Ever since we arrived here, at least.
You're right on the money there. Yes.
Yeah.
The volcano.
Yes.
Yes. So we actually got to get pretty close, right?
Don't tell my mom.
Yes, don't tell mine if she's listening.
I just hope mine won't.
Yes.
No, actually, I called her once we were there, and she was really impressed by seeing that we were that close, and she really liked it.
Yeah, I still haven't sent my mom the photos of the videos. I'm going to make sure I do when I'm back in Sweden safe.
This was just incredible. I don't even have the words to really describe it properly, because all the videos, all the pictures we took, they just don't do justice at all. I mean, yes, it's sort of nice that you on the videos you can hear the volcano. Like, for me it sounds a bit like he's grumpy and it's like erupting. But still on the other hand, you really don't have the camera equipment, or also, I don't know, the whole impression that you get with this glow, and then you have the clouds, or the ash cloud going through, and then you also have these different colors of sort of clouds coming out, ash clouds coming out, so you have this super dark one, and then just a white one next to it, and you're like, interesting, what is happening there?
Yeah, so much going on. It was, I was expecting, like, when we were to drive to see, like, I don't know, some lava like leaking out of the top of a mountain or something like that. And like, ooh, it's erupting. But when we went there, like when we were driving to the lookout point, which was only 3 kilometers away, it was exploding with lava. Like it was shooting out into the sky. It was like, you know, something out of a Lord of the Rings film, basically. I've never seen lava like that before, ever.
No, me neither.
Yeah, it was really a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to have a look at it.
Definitely. Then also when it sort of was blowing out the lava, and then you could see like these, I call them orange dots, but you know, like the sprinkles everywhere.
Yes. Yeah.
It looked like, wow, it was really crazy.
Yeah, it was like shiny lava everywhere, and I honestly, I'm going to keep this memory like locked in and cherish it, I think, for most of my life. It was, I honestly don't think I'll be able to see something like this again either. So,
I don't think so either.
Yeah, it kind of puts things into perspective a little bit, because, you know, even though this thing was ruined our data, we also got something that was very unique, and we got to share it with a bunch of really cool people
as
well.
Yes, that's true.
So that was super crazy, but obviously all good things have to come to an end, and we're going to be heading back to Sweden tomorrow.
Let's hope we can actually fly from La Palma.
Yes.
And we don't have to take the ferry to Tenerife again.
Yeah.
So far we haven't heard that. And it looks like the wind is also consistent towards the south, so therefore away from the airport.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like that should be fine.
Yes. Fingers crossed. It would be nice to have a bit more of a smoother sail back to home. But how are you feeling about going home?
I'm really excited to be on my way back tomorrow. sounds a bit weird because it's like super warm here and super summery and super holiday and everything. Yeah. But I have to admit, I really miss Sweden. Yeah. Even though I know it's probably like gonna be 10 degrees and rain and dark. But still,
it's home, like,
yeah,
I guess.
It's home.
And I we've enjoyed every moment of this, but like I think everyone is sort of feeling it's time to go home and to get back and...
Yeah, back into this like normal routine that you've sort of developed at home.
For me, it's also made me very motivated to try and get back to Australia as soon as I can. I think traveling now, it's becoming more possible with this pandemic. And so
I'm sure your parents will really love that.
Yeah.
Your family in general.
Yeah.
Especially after sending them pictures from a volcano.
Yes, exactly. I don't think my mum will let me leave. But yeah. All right, Bibi. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure traveling with you.
Likewise.
Yeah, it's been really fun making this journal series as well.
Yes, it was really cool.
Thanks, Bibi.
Thank you very much, Nick.
This was the seventh and last episode of the second season of The Meridian, which is produced by Anna Anadotti and hosted by Rebecca Forsberg and Nicholas Borsato. Our guest today was Chiara Pirani. Bibiana Prino assisted with the field reporting at La Palma. If you have any comments or questions about the show, then feel free to reach out to us via our emails or the Lund Observatory account on Twitter. In our theme at the beginning of the show, we could hear the members of a research school, Astronomics Ungdom, held here at Lund Observatory last summer. This was the last episode of this season. We'd like to send a big thanks to all our listeners out there, and we hope to catch you in season 3. Thank you for listening.